Yasyayam Chiti Mandalam Bhagavato Nantamurtahe Sahasya Shirasa Ekasmine Vashirshane Vriyamanam Siddhartha Hiva Lakshate. So you can repeat. Yasya. Of whom? Idam. This. Chittimandalam. Universe. Bhagavataha. Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anantamurtahe. In the form of Anantadeva. Sahasasirasaha. Who has thousands of hoods. Ekasmin. On one. Eva. Only. Shirshane. Hood. Rivanam. Is being sustained. Siddhartha Eva. Like a white mustard seed. Lakshate. Is seen. So translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued. This great universe situated on one of Anantadeva's thousands of hoods appears just like a white mustard seed. It is infinitesimal compared to the hood of Lord Ananta. So there's no purport to this text, so we'll go on to the next text. I'll read it and then we'll do the translation. Yashahava hidam kaleno pasananjahir shato amarsha virachitta ruchira brahma bruvo antarena sankarshano nama rudra kikadasa vyuhas tri akshas tri shikam shuram utambayan udatishtat. So translation is, at the time of devastation, when Lord Anantadev desires to destroy the entire creation, he becomes slightly angry. Then from between his two eyebrows appears three-eyed Rudra, carrying a trident. This Rudra, who is known as Sankarshan, is the embodiment of the 11 Rudras or incarnations of Lord Shiva. He appears in order to devastate the entire creation. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In each creation, the living entities are given a chance to close their business as conditioned souls. It's an interesting expression, business as conditioned souls. When they misuse this opportunity and do not go back to home, back to Godhead, Lord Sankarshan becomes angry. The 11 Rudras, expansions of Lord Shiva, come out of Lord Sankarshan's eyebrows due to his angry mood, and all of them together devastate the entire creation. So, Omagana Timiranda Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeditam, Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, sometimes this can actually be compared to a father who sends his child to the university, and after spending so much money on the education, it's interesting, on the education, and the child, you know, has to take the same courses over and over again because he keeps flunking out, then the child just doesn't graduate. And so that naturally the father would get a little angry after he spent all that money, gone into debt. And he's thinking, you know, what did I get for this? You know, all this endeavor. And the guy is still a freshman. So it's something like that. That Krishna gets a little frustrated with all of us. Because after all that endeavor, then we still remain here in the material world trying to punak punas char vita char bananas, chewing the chewed. Matirna Krishna paratos vitova. Mito vitva yetagraha vratanam. And then the Gopir Vishitam Pamishram. Punas Punas Char Vitachar Vananam. So, of course, it's a famous verse. Those who actually don't have their mind fixed on Krishna, they can have good association, good instruction, but they're simply graha ratanam. They're determined to remain within their bodily consciousness and then the extended bodily consciousness. They become ignorant, which is the Rudra principle, which is mentioned here. They punak punas charvita charvananam. So, the question is, before I start talking about the Rudras, how to break this habit? Because it's a habit. Just like many of us have habits or addictions. So how to break a habit? Now, I was actually listening to someone on NPR yesterday. Not how to get liberated, but how to break habits. It was a really interesting discussion. That most people, they can't just break habits like that. Or as they say in Spanish, de repente. Nobody here speaks Spanish. Where's your wife? She's not here. Too bad. And Chaitanya speaks Spanish. De repente, right? So what they suggested is, this is interesting also as far as preaching Krishna consciousness, trying to get someone out of this material world. Because people really can't change immediately like that. In general, sometimes there's people who are just very unique personalities who can all of a sudden have a realization and change. But usually change comes about through small steps that each and every one of those steps have to be reinforced with some positive reinforcement. So they were giving the example, it was an interesting discussion on NPR, the example of one wants to lose weight. That the problem with scales is that sometimes they show you gaining weight when you try to lose weight. And so you step on them and you become discouraged because, obviously if you drank a little bit too much water that morning, even though you may have less bodily fat, you're going to register maybe a pound more. Water is pretty heavy. So usually, like when I weigh myself, I do it before I drink, just so I get encouraged. So, do it in the morning, right after I go to the bathroom and, evacuate and everything like that. I said, wow, you do really well today. But you don't want to weigh yourself after you eat. Anyway, so it's interesting. So this particular individual, he works in Stanford as far as behavioral modification using electronics. That was his specialty. Anyway, and his students, very interesting personality. I'm studying his work right now, how to change people's behavior. Because that's actually the business we're in, right? Changing people's behavior. Our own behavior and changing others' behavior. So his students have gone on to be in charge of Facebook, Twitter. He has an all-star cast of students. This NPR thing was recommended on the Krishna West conference. Did you hear it? No, you didn't hear it. Anyway, so it was very interesting how to change people's behavior. So he said, we have to design a scale that even though you may weigh a little bit more this morning, it'll have to encourage you by saying you're doing a good job, So he's saying the scales in the future, that you'll step on. Say, you're doing a good job, Bob. I'm really proud of you. Say, oh, really? And then you'll start to lose more weight. So in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we experience that, people try to go cold turkey. I don't know if you've ever heard of the expression cold turkey. That means if someone has an addiction to like heroin or some other drug like that, or chocolate. It is pretty addictive.
Some addiction.
Or to movies. I mean, it's also, or video games, right? Then if we encourage people just to go cold turkey, sometimes it doesn't always work. So it's like when one's trying to get off of heroin, they have this methadone type of thing, and they gradually reduce the methadone. So, and then we have to encourage people at each step. That's preaching Krishna consciousness, which was really interesting, the realization I had from hearing this, that you have to encourage people at each step that, yes, you're doing well, make another little baby step, another little baby step, another little baby step. As, of course, Krishna says in the Gita, Bahunam jananamante gyanavan mam prapajate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlava, that after many births and deaths, one actually comes to the realization that I am everything. I mean, theoretically we understand Krishna is everything, but practically speaking, do we actually understand that Krishna is in every atom, Krishna is in our hearts, everything belongs to Krishna? I don't think so, because if we practically understood that or had that realization, then we'd be acting quite differently than we're acting nowadays. No, we'd be always Krishna conscious, right? If we had that realization. So it takes time, it takes practice, or as Krishna says in the 6th chapter of the Gita, by constant practice, because Arjuna says, you know, it's difficult to control the mind, and Krishna says by constant practice and detachment. So this is how to become Krishna conscious, you know, gradually, a gradual process. We don't want to be like shooting stars. Shooting stars means like a meteorite. A meteorite is a meteor that hits the atmosphere, for those of you who need to know what that means. And then when it comes into the atmosphere, the friction, it's interesting, friction with the air causes it to heat up and then it burns up. That's called a meteorite. It's different than a meteor. So we don't want to be like that. We just like come in contact with Krishna consciousness and then we burn up. We want to just gradually, just like the astronauts, I'm saying that deliberately like that, when they come back into the atmosphere, they come back gradually. They don't just like go at the same speed as a meteorite. Of course, they also have a heat shield on there, that space capsule, so that they don't burn up. So we have to actually be patient with ourselves and patient with others in Krishna consciousness, not try to jump too high, like imitating Hanuman. What does the Prabhupada say? He said, big belly, big monkey, Salem jumping melancholy. So you may try to imitate Hanuman, and if you try to jump to Ceylon or Sri Lanka, then you'll fall on your belly, right? Big belly, you have a big belly. And you'll fall on it. Anyway, so that's one of the points here, that we have to gradually make spiritual advancement and not try to go too quickly and that's actually mentioned in the next verse of the verse after, where it talks about the intimate loving exchanges of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We shouldn't be jumping up and think ourselves at a higher standard of devotional service than we actually are. Anyway, getting back to what's being described here in the verse, you have a Lord Adantadev manifesting Rudra. So this is not the first time that Rudra or the 11 Rudras have been manifested. And actually in the beginning of the creation, you have Lord Brahma, who is the original Prajapati. And he's creating all these different living entities, and eventually he creates 4 children. He doesn't need his wife all the time to create children. And these 4 children are the 4 Kumaras, 4 young sons of Lord Brahma, and they're Brahmins. And Lord Brahma, being immersed in the mode of passion at that particular time, he just really wants to fill the universe with living entities. I mean, so that's his focus. So every time he creates, almost every time he creates living entities, he gives them the duty of creating more living entities. So that's what happened with the four Kumaras. Four dice little boys. He said, you know, my dice little children, when you grow up, we're going to find you nice little wives. And they said to Lord Brahma, no. And Lord Brahma, of course, got a little angry at them, extremely angry. And Lord Brahma tried to control his anger. Because anger is a manifestation of the mode of ignorance. But it comes from the mode of passion. In other words, one has some desire. Jayato vishayat putmsam sangos tesho pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate. From contemplating sense objects or having some particular goal, not only contemplating a gross sense object, but just having a particular goal, one becomes attached to that goal or sense object. And when one becomes attached to the goal or sense object, then you become extremely attached, and it can even be termed lust at that point. In other words, you're just like a fanatic. You want it. You really want it. You want to do it. You want to go there. I remember when I was young, my parents would promise me to take me on vacation. Actually, it's interesting. I was a more educated chap. But when we went to Washington, D.C., my parents promised to take me to the archives. You've heard of the archives before? That's where they have the Declaration of Independence and all those other nice things. So I was actually, somehow or other, I got attached to it. I don't know why. And we didn't have enough time in our trip to Washington to see the archives. And I got angry and he started throwing a fit. And for the next 5 years, I told my parents that I don't trust you anymore because you didn't take me to see the archives. I mean, just some stupid thing like that, you know, archives? I mean, it's not, what sort of enjoyment is there in the archive? You see a bunch of old documents, you know. But somehow or other, my mind was fixed. I really want to see these old documents the founding fathers signed, and especially, you know, John Hancock's signature and all these other signatures I wanted to see. And so I became attached by contemplating on it and angry. And I, you know, still remember it to this day, which is kind of remarkable, which was, I don't remember how many years ago, I was 6 or 7 years old. And now I'm 65, so that's 58 years ago. Can you remember that? Can you imagine that? The anger was so intense that I remember to this day. And even before my father passed away, I would always say, you never took me to the archives. So that shows you can become attached or even lusty to that point. Practically for any object or any objective, right? I mean, can you imagine that? And then Jayato Bishop, Sangostation Bajayate, Sangachan Jayate, Kama Kama Krota Bajayate. Then anger comes, Kama Krota Bajayate, Krota Bhavati Samoha, or one becomes Samoha, means very bewildered, extremely bewildered. Samoha Vati, Vipramaha, one becomes, loses his intelligence. Nashta buddhi. He forgets everything. He forgets, you know, I'm supposed to be a devotee. I'm supposed to chant Hare Krishna. I'm supposed to, you know, this is my identity. He forgets everything about reality. This is the mode of ignorance. Nashta buddhi. And then vinashati. What happens? He becomes lost. So this is, of course, from the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Describing what happens when one contemplates a sense object. So, Lord Brahma, getting back to the story, Lord Brahma had this objective, and he was influenced by the mode of passion. He's a great pure devotee, but somehow or other, he got into this creation thing. I mean, I've also experienced that too. I mean, I just have to be honest about my own realization. That when we were building the temple here, you know, building a temple is a completely spiritual affair. And I would show up every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning to do the construction when we were building the temple. And then some people would come a little later And they'd sit around just talking to each other, and I would get angry at them. Because, you know, I was in the mode... for Krishna, I was in the mode of passion. I have to admit it. You know, I was angry. Just kidding. I just had to control myself, keep myself from screaming at them. I mean, one time... I hate to admit this. This is like confession. So one time there was one person who was working with us in the beginning days of the movement here. And the only thing he could do is walk to the store and get a 7-Up. I mean, that was the extent of his service. And I didn't even take 7-Up. He didn't even get one from me. So, he was so lazy. He was like the Maynard G. Krebs of Krishna consciousness. So I actually, he's the only person I ever hit in my whole life. I picked him up by the, you know, the neck here, you know, by his shirt. And I slapped him. And he said, "You hit me." And I said, "Damn right I hit you. You lazy bum." So anyway, so this practical experience that even when you're doing something for Krishna, you can get so much attached to the results that you'll get angry at people unnecessarily. So Lord Brahma, getting back to the story. So this is not a criticism of Lord Brahma. I'm just giving a practical experience in my own life how it's happened when I was engaged in Krishna's service. So Lord Brahma got angry at the four Kumaras, his four little sons. And of course, he controlled them. He controlled his anger, and he didn't start yelling and screaming at them. But the anger came out from his forehead. So when you're Lord Brahma, you got to be careful about your feelings, because your feelings come out as persons. Whereas with me, it just comes out, you know, internalizes, you know, makes me angry, blood pressure goes up. But nobody came out when I got angry. No living entities came out, thank God. Or else the temple would have been filled with Rudras. We actually had one devotee previously, Maharudra, who was here. But he was a nice devotee. So Lord read these four Kumaras got Lord Brahma angry. It's not their fault. All they wanted to do was engage in spiritual realization because they wanted to remain brahmacharis their whole lives and not get entangled. And they always want to remain young. Prabhupada said, this is not to encourage any of you, but Prabhupada said if someone remains celibate, then they remain young. And the mind is always very sharp. And Prabhupada said that if someone engages in illicit sex life, by that act, which is according to the Ayurvedas too, the ojas in the body becomes so much dissipated that practically one wishes they were dead by the time they were 40 or 50. In other words, there's so much bodily problems that occur. So now celibacy is very much recommended. So the four Kumaras understood this. So, excuse me. So Rudra appeared from Lord Brahma's forehead. And immediately he started to cry, which is also the mode of ignorance. Sorry, you ladies. So, that's why you got the name Rudra. Rudra can mean anger or tears or crying. Actually, the name Ravana is one who makes other people cry. So Rudra was crying. And then Lord Brahma, of course, said, "Don't cry, my son. Don't cry, my son. I'll pacify you." And he gave Rudra the 11 Rudranis at that particular point. And there's names of the 11 Rudranis. And he said, "All right, so you should engage in the process of having children." This was a mistake. Because Lord Brahma was focused on just increasing the population in the universe, so he said, "You should increase the population." So Rudra got together with the Rudranis, and they really increased the population. But the problem was, you know, like father like son, or like son like father, that they all had a problem with crying and anger. So you had like millions and millions of Rudras at this particular point. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam it describes that there's 11 Rudras and 100 million Rudras, which are the followers of Rudra. Very interesting. And so they all, anyway, so they attempted to devour the whole universe. All these Rudras that have been created from the original Rudra and the Rudradis. And Lord Brahma said, no, this is not my idea. This is not the time for the cosmic dissolution. You should engage in penance. So he had them engage in penance. And then he told them there's certain places where you can reside. And this is a very interesting description. I wrote them down. You can reside in the heart. And there's a reason for this. It's not that everybody's heart has the Rudra principle in it. But when one experiences anger, that's a manifestation of Rudra. Not that the heart always has Rudra in it. Prabhupada explains this very clearly in his purport. And then he says you can reside in the senses. You know, when the senses become uncontrolled, Adanta Gopir, Vishatam Tamishram, as that verse I quoted before, then that's also Rudra. In other words, it's a potency of Rudra, or a manifestation of Rudra, or the principle of Rudra that becomes manifest when we're not alert. And he said also you can reside in the life air. Wow. Life air in the body, of course, you got these different life airs that actually maintain the position of the subtle body. The subtle body floats in the life airs. And when these life airs get disturbed, then one can exhibit anger, one can exhibit insanity. Because insanity in the Ayurvedas is described as a dysfunction or an imbalance in the life air. So you said you could reside in the sky. That doesn't mean the sky always has Rudra. It means when there's lightning in the sky. When there's some devastating, destructive influence in the sky, you can reside in the air. And also when you have these terrible winds like tornadoes, hurricanes, that's the Rudra principle right there. It's actually a principle, and it's a Shakti. It's not just like a theoretical principle, but it's Rudra's Shakti being manifest in this world. Because it's destructive. Anytime you see something that's destructive, and you want, and you, let's say you want to destroy something. How many people here have wanted to destroy their computer sometimes? You can raise your hand, you know. Some people are not honest. So that's all, you know, many times, you know, the computer is just like, you know, I touch a key and it doesn't work. And I just want to go, boom, on the keyboard. I've never done it yet. And that's Rudra. So Rudra is always like in the background of the material creation as soon as we're inattentive. Another place is water. Of course, Prabhupada mentions the water in terms of, let's say you have a tsunami or something like that. That's the Rudra principle. Any of these things that have to do with destruction. Earth, whenever there's an earthquake, a disturbance in the earth. The moon. How does the moon do that? Does anyone think about that? The tides, and also influencing people's minds. Like you see sometimes during the full moon, then people are lunacy, people are angry. You know, I know that during the full moon I have to be very careful. I don't do any counseling during the full moon time because it's dangerous to deal with some of the devotees. So, no, seriously, people get angrier. Their emotions, they start crying more. Not the men, the ladies. Sorry. Apologize. This is not a Krishna West statement. Anyway, so sometimes the men start crying or they get angry. And then another interesting thing Prabhupada mentions is austerity too. Why austerity? Prabhupada said many yogis and philosophers are doing their activities motivated by the Rudra principle. Interesting. And Prabhupada gives the example of Durvasa, who is obviously motivated by the Rudra principle. Durvasa, as I mentioned the other day in class, means the person with a bad mood. And he's always like on edge. I mean, there's many stories about Durvasa getting angry. Of course, Ambarish's story is the typical story that we always tell. That Ambarish so-called offended Durvasa by taking a little water, by breaking a fast on the Dwadasi day, which actually wasn't really offensive. And Durvasa pulled a little hair out of his head and attempted to kill Ambarish, created a demon by that. And then finally the Lord Sudarshan Chakra had to chase Durvasa all over the creation and practically to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So you see, even people do austerity based on anger. I mean, look at Hiranyakashipu. I mean, that was definitely the Rudra principle. So Prabhupada said many yogis, they're performing yoga practice, or philosophers. I mean, let's say the atheistic philosophers, and they write so many books about why there's no God. But there's definitely a underlying mood of anger. You know, if you read, like, between the lines, you can see that the person is angry at people who believe in God or angry at God himself. So there's definitely a Rudra principle. I've often told devotees that when you're dealing with someone with a different philosophy, first of all, you should understand their psychology behind it. You know, what is their emotional basis? Because you're not going to be able to defeat them. Just like right now we're discussing, this is something with Krishna West, we're discussing the FDG principle. Does anyone know what that is? Female Diksha Gurus. That's it. And ISKCON. And, you know, we're getting, it's interesting. Everybody has their own slokas or quotes or whatever or opinions. And basically the people, not to criticize the people who don't want female Diksha Gurus, but I will anyway. So the people who don't, you can see that they're just immersed. You know, this is criticizing your opponent. It's called an ad hominem attack. So they're actually immersed in anger. And they don't really hear your arguments. And they come up with their own arguments. So, but their argument, or the basis of their arguments, is actually their emotion. It's not really a firm philosophical conviction, a detached, neutral philosophical conviction. Actually, generally when one's talking philosophy, one should talk philosophy with a very cool head. Like Prabhupada said, we should have cool heads. That's why we shave our hair. So, but you see that generally when people do talk philosophy, they talk with hotheads. In other words, they have some axe to grind, so to speak. So this is what I've observed with this whole female Diksha Guru thing. So we've come to the conclusion there's no reconciliation between both the parties. No philosophical reconciliation. So we have to have a mediation where, not even a mediation, just like some sort of a adjudication, where one side gives in one thing, say, okay, women can't initiate here, 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 and here. Women can initiate there. Only women over 95 years old can initiate. I'm just joking. But you know, it's simply like a deal. Let's make a deal because we're never going to come to an agreement because we're not, ultimately, underlying, we're not actually talking on the philosophical platform anymore. We're talking on the emotional platform anymore. So you see this Rudra principle, that was the point Prabhupada made. I'm bringing it into some modern context. This Rudra principle sort of pervades all sorts of discussions or arguments. Actually, the word discussion means, the implicit meaning of the word discussion is argument. You say, I want to discuss this with you. That means I'm going to argue with you. Otherwise, you'd say, I'd like to have a talk with you. Or you know, we'd like to exchange views. But when you say, can we discuss this? It basically means the Rudra principle is behind that. Interesting, isn't it? So Prabhupada did say that generally the philosophers and yogis and everything like that, they are held by this Rudra principle. Okay? So I think we have to end class. All glories to the Rudra principle. you all better surrender or I'll get angry with you. Yes, actually the word disgust. I want to discuss something with you because